Okay, so Atha Deva Gana Sarve, all the demigods, right? And everyone else, the priests and other people who were members of the sacrificial assembly, Rudra Nik Parajita, they were defeated by Lord Rudra, Lord Shiva, right? And his associates, they were all defeated and injured by all these weapons, Shul, Patti, Shanistrimsha, Gada, Parigam, Udgaray. So they all had broken limbs, right, bandages, plasters, like that. Okay, so they approached Lord Brahma and they were greatly fearful. Text 3. Upalabhya Puravetad Bhagavan Abjasambhava नारायणस्य विश्वात्मा नाकस्याध्वरम् ईयतु.
Both Lord Brahma and Vishnu had already known that such events would occur in the sacrificial arena of Daksha, and knowing beforehand, they didn't go to the sacrifice.
Okay, so Daksha, this is the second sacrifice he was performing, right? And he did not invite Lord Shiva, rather he had an offensive attitude towards Lord Shiva, right? So knowing that Daksha has offensive attitude toward Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu did not participate in that sacrifice. Right? Bhagavan Abjasambhava and Narayanascha Vishwatma. Right? So they already knew beforehand that any endeavor, any sacrifice or so on in which there are offenses involved, the results will be disastrous. Right? Result will be disastrous. So, Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu, already knowing that there will be no auspicious result, right, in any endeavor where offenses are committed towards devotees. So, therefore, they did not participate. They did not participate. So, in general, one should stay far away from the events where devotees are offended or something. Right? One should not in any way participate in an event organized by a person or so on who is offensive. Right? One should keep a distance. So, Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu, they both teach us that. Text 4. Tadakanya vibhupraha tejiyasi kritagasi shemaya tatra sabhuyan naprayena bhutsatam.
When Lord Brahma heard everything from the demigods and the members who had attended the sacrifice, he replied, "You cannot be happy in executing a sacrifice if you blaspheme a great personality and thereby offend his lotus feet. You cannot have happiness in that way."
Okay. Tad akarnya vibhu praha. Right? Lord Brahma is referred to as Vibhu. He's also a great personality. So what is Lord Brahma telling them? That how can you have anything good, anything auspicious? Shemaya tatra sabhuyan. Teji yasi kritagasi, when such powerful personalities are offended as Lord Shiva, Shemaya tatra sabhuyan, how can there be anything auspicious? Right? In a place where devotees are offended. Shemaya tatra sabhuyan. And Lord Brahma is saying, So they are come to him, they have come to him to seek solace and so on. Lord Brahma is chastising them and even saying Naprayan Bhubutsitam, you should not even actually desire to live. Right? What to speak of, they are saying, you know, we are so much suffering and all that. Brahma says, I am wondering how your people are living, first of all. You should have died. Right? You have done such a mistake. Right? What to speak of comfortable living, you should not be living only. Right? So like they have come to seek some comfort from Lord Brahma. Naprayan Bhubutsitam. Right? You should not generally, right? Prayan means for most part, right? You know what praya. Mostly you should not be living only. You have done such a great offense. Right? So it may seem that Lord Brahma is very cruel, right? Externally looking, because they have come to seek solace and so on to Lord Brahma, and they have come with in a very pitiable state, you know, having plasters, bandages, right, all over the body, right? And Lord Brahma said, you should have died only. Right? It is like, seems to be very cruel, right? But actually, it is Lord Brahma's duty to warn them against the great offense they have committed. Right? So Brahmaji, so they are feeling they are in a very bad situation. Brahmaji says, I think you are not so bad because you are still living. Yeah, you are not doing so bad also. Right? So Brahmaji wants to tell them that you still haven't got sufficient punishment for the mistake you have committed. Right? You should have been punished even more, because there cannot be anything auspicious when great personalities are offended. Right? So Lord Brahma is the leader, and it is his duty to warn them, right, against the most dangerous act or most dangerous offense, right, that is offense to the Vaishnava. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, Lord Brahma explained to the demigods that although Daksha wanted to enjoy the results of foodie sacrificial activity, it is not possible to enjoy when one offends a great personality like Lord Shiva. It was good for Daksha to have died in the fight, because if he had lived, he would have committed such offenses at the feet of great personalities again and again. Right? So demigods told Lord Shiva, we have a very bad news. Daksha has died. Brahmaji says, it's a good news. Right? It is good. That's what Prabhupada is writing. It was good for Daksha to have died. Right? Because he would become more offensive. Lord Brahma did not take it as a bad news. Because he committed such an offense, he has died. It is good for him. Because he would commit such mistakes again and again otherwise. Right? So, then Prabhupada explains how when the king punishes a murderer, right, gives him a capital punishment, it is actually his mercy. Right? We have heard that from Prabhupada time and again. It is mercy, because otherwise if that murderer commits so many murders again, his suffering will be so much prolonged. Right? His suffering will be so much prolonged. So, basically, punishment is not bad here. That is being spoken over here. So in general, we should see if a devotee has committed some mistake, he should not try to evade the punishment, right, or reduce the punishment. Right? If some devotee has committed a mistake, he should accept the punishment so that he may be purified from his offensive mentality. Right? So if you see Maharaj Parikshit, how does he respond? Although it was an apparent mistake, right? It was ordained by the Lord, it was not his being. Right? Somehow he, but anyway, he committed the mistake, he immediately accepted it, right? He repented it, and what did he? He expected that because he has committed this offense against a Brahmana, therefore some calamity must come. Right? And then when he thought that some calamity must be on the way, What was his feelings? Tadastu kamam hi agnishkritaya me. Tadastu kamam, he said, I want that. Right? I don't want to work on how to become free from the punishment, how to reduce the punishment, or not have it at all. But Parikshit Maharaj, in a very exemplary way, he said, Tadastu kamam hi agnishkritaya me. I desire the punishment and it should come as soon as possible. Why? Because yoga nishkritaya me, the sin which I have committed, offense, I'll be relieved from that. Yathana kurnyam punar eva adha. And I will not commit, because I'll be purified from a sin and I will not commit such a mistake again. So let the punishment come and come as soon as possible so that I may be purified. But we see that the demigods are far away from that kind of consciousness. Right? They have come to relieve the result of their punishment, right? Reduce it. They may be forgiven and again be comfortably situated. Right? But the attitude of a Vaishnava is different. Right? When he commits a mistake, he is ready to accept the punishment so that he may be purified, not to commit the punishment again. Yes.
Actually, I was just thinking about the position of a devotees and the authority in an institutional setup. Here, like demigods, they are also subordinate to Brahma. They are coming for solace. And, you know, generally I was thinking that Brahma would have shown Vaishnava compassion on them. You know, similar situations sometimes happen, and you know, many times the devotees, they forgive and they again engage them in the service. They don't curse them or they don't remove them. And what is exactly the, is it a misplaced compassion, or you know, just to be, you know, right, to be right, you know, you give a, you know, you impart a proper just, and then you know, the offended devotees, they become, you know, disheartened, and they become like, how to reform them? There are dualities.
The thing is, Brahma, he does go to Lord Shiva to ask forgiveness, but he is first making them cautious that they have committed a great offense. Right? So first he is mildly rebuking them. He is going to help them. But first, because their offense is so severe, right? It's a great aparad they have done against Lord Shiva, right? So therefore, they have to be warned first, right? Sufficiently, and it's the perfect way. We have to learn from great authorities how to act. Of course, we cannot, you know, imitate. It has to be always according to the, you know, the time, place, circumstances and particular event involved, everything. But at least, because they have committed a great mistake, it's duty of Brahmaji to tell them that it's a very serious offense you have committed. Right? And he is going to help them to come out of that. Right? So therefore, compassion is there. Right? But a serious warning is also there, so that they may not take it cheaply and do it again. Fine? Text 5. Athapi yujam kritakilbisha bhavan Ebar hisho bhag bhajam paradhu. Prasadayadvam parishuddha chetasa Shipra prasadam Pragrahitangri Padmam.
You have excluded Lord Shiva from taking part in the sacrificial results, and therefore you are all offenders at his lotus feet. Still, if you go without mental reservations and surrender unto him and fall down at his lotus feet, he will be very pleased.
Okay. Athapi yujam. Athapi means still. What does still means? Still, if you desire to live, mostly you should not live. Right? But still, if you desire to live, you should have committed the offense, right? Prasadaye dhvam. Immediately, quickly go. Quickly go and please Lord Shiva. Prasadaye dhvam. You should go and satisfy him. Right? But the demigods may say, but it may not be an easy task. He is very angry. Right? Daksha has been killed. We may be the next ones. Right? Brahmaji says, Parishuddha Chetasa. Don't have all those apprehensions. Right? Take out all those fears from your mind. Right? Parishuddha Chetasa. Sometimes, like many times we imagine, you know, what if this, what if that. Right? We keep thinking and the mind keeps giving so many. Lord Shiva says, Brahma says, no, don't have all those reservations. Shupram Prasadam. Right? He will be pleased. Lord Shiva is easily to be pleased. Right? So if anyone goes and beg forgiveness from Vaishnavas in general, Vaishnavas are you know, they said, oh no, you have not committed any offense. Right? Like in most of our experience, when you go and fall down, offer dandava to some devotee whom you have offended or so, as soon as you say, he will say, no, actually it was my mistake. Right? Because Vaishnavas are generally very merciful. Right? They are not having that kind of mentality like other materialistic person. So therefore, Lord Brahma is telling them, Parishuddha Chetasa. Don't imagine so many things. What will happen if Lord Shiva kill us also? He may be very angry. What if he criticizes us or rebukes us and so on? So Lord Brahma says, no, give up all those reservations. Right? Parishuddha Chetasa means without mental reservations. You see the word-to-word meaning. Shupram Prasadam. He is very easy to be pleased, Lord Shiva being a Vaishnava. Therefore, go and fall at his feet. Right? Pragrihit Angri Padmam. Go and catch hold of his feet and do it very quickly. Right? Go to text 6. Ashashana jivitamadvarasya Loka sapala kupite nayasmin Tamashudevam priyaya vihinam Shama payadvam ridividham durakte.
Lord Brahma also advised them that the Lord Shiva is so powerful that by his anger all the planets and their chief controllers can be destroyed immediately. Also, he said that Lord Shiva was especially sorry because he had recently lost his dear wife and also very much afflicted by the unkind words of Daksha. Under the circumstance, Lord Brahma suggested it would behoove them to go to at once and beg his pardon.
Okay, so also Lord Brahma is saying that Ashashana Jivitam Advarasya, right? So you all, if still you desire to live, also if you want to revive the sacrifice, right? Jivitam Advarasya, if you want to again revive the sacrifice, then you should immediately go to Lord Shiva. Right? And then about him saying, Lord Shiva is so powerful, his anger can just destroy all the world with their rulers. Right? But he can also be easily pleased, so you should all go to him. And especially Lord Brahma is mentioning another reason, saying not just for your revival and for the revival of sacrifice, but you should also go and beg forgiveness because Lord Shiva is afflicted. You know, he is actually in a state where he is afflicted by the death of his wife and also afflicted by the unkind words of Daksha. Right? Priyaya Vahinam. Right? He has lost his dear wife and also Hridi Vidham Durakta. So therefore you should also be sensitive and see that he is a great personality, but Lord Shiva also has emotions, right? And he is now has lost his dear wife, heart has been afflicted by the sharp word of Daksha. Therefore, we should go and beg forgiveness from that perspective also, right? A human perspective. You should beg forgiveness from him because he is also feeling the pain. He is also being afflicted. So it's your duty to try to pacify him and relieve him to some extent from his pain of the heart. Yes.
The demigods approached to Brahma because they had a lot of problems and their life in danger. So that yes. is ultimately the approach to higher authority. In our case, in a sadhak point of view, that is sometimes we do a lot of offense, knowingly or unknowingly. And we just take it casually or negligence, not approaching to, not consulting anybody. And by the way, we are also hampering our sadhana or you are not getting that higher test. So we are unable to repent and unable to submit. So we are not getting the right solution. Sometimes it happens in sadhu case. Here actually demigod approached Brahma, so Brahma consulted and realized them, you have done a lot of big offense. Now if you go immediately, then... So from here you can... suppose I have done offense, then if you quickly go approach that person, then the offense, the reaction will come less or like that if you go later on. It varies from the... Suppose I have to go later. I did offense and I realize I have go...
Oh, you are basically asking, is it good to go immediately or if someone has postponed, then later he goes, the reaction will be more if he goes later to beg forgiveness. Right? Anyway, it's always good to go as soon as possible, as soon as you realize that you have done an offense. Right? One should immediately go. Right? That is the best thing to do. The lesser you postpone begging forgiveness, the better it is. The lesser we postpone, right? So as soon as we realize, we should beg forgiveness. So that is the principle, right? Anyway, if someone has committed Vaishnav aparad, he may be forgiven, then the reaction will be surely, when the devotee forgives from the heart, then the reaction reduces. But still the reaction may be there to some extent. Right? It's up to the Lord. But the reactions of Vaishnav aparad, they do not just fully go away like that. The reactions, to some extent, the reaction remain. It's like in the example of Chatush Kumaras, although they later begged forgiveness for cursing the associates of the Lord, but they could not develop their love for the Supreme Lord to the extent they would have developed without offending. Right? So the offenses, even though may be forgiven by another Vaishnava, still continue to obstruct our devotional progress. Right? So therefore, one should not think that I can keep offending and keep begging forgiveness and so on. So that is a dangerous cycle. Right? So one has to mainly work upon not to offend devotees. Right? And if one realizes one has made some offenses, then one should immediately, as soon as possible, beg forgiveness. Fine? Yes. Yes. Okay. So, text 7. नाहम न यज्ञो न च यूयमन्ये ये देह भाजो मनयश्च तत्त्वम् विदु प्रमाणं बलवीर्ययोर्वा यस्यात्मतंत्रस्य कौपायं विदित्सेत्.
Self, Indra, all the members assembled in the sacrificial arena or all the sages could know how powerful Lord Shiva is. Under the circumstances, who dare to commit an offense at his lotus feet?
Right? So, Lord Brahma is telling them about in this world how powerful Lord Shiva is, that even he, what is so many demigods, sages, or he himself, they all could not ascertain the power of Lord Shiva. Right? So therefore, who would dare to commit an offense at his lotus feet? Again, Lord Brahma is kind of giving them again a warning that this kind of act, no one should dare to do it again. Right? Lord Brahma has proposed in the last verse, Ashashana Jivita Madhvarasya, if you desire the revival of the sacrifice. So the demigods are saying, you know, how will the sacrifice be revived now? The Yajman has been killed, Daksha has been killed, everything has been frustrated. And what to speak of reviving sacrifice? And now our bones have been broken, it will take so long time to recover. Right? Is there any point in going and begging forgiveness from Lord Shiva? The full punishment has already been given. Right? Like someone has already given full punishment. Right? Our haddi pali sab toot gaya, abhi forgiveness jaake karenge to milega bhi kya? Right? What shall we gain by asking forgiveness now when our bones have been broken already? Right? Daksha has already been killed. So is there anything good that we have to come out? Right? So Lord Brahma is saying, you can't imagine the power of Lord Shiva. Right? So from that perspective also, that he can still do anything he wants. Right? Don't think. Therefore, go and surrender to him. Right? So one should not think, what use will be surrender now? If I had surrendered earlier, that would have some use. But now I have been, you know, thoroughly punished and so on. Now what will surrender, what good the surrender will bring? Right? So one should, sometimes we try to postpone the surrender thinking that will not be of much use now. Right? So, but Lord Brahma is telling, no, you should go and surrender, right? Don't be calculative, what will be the use now and so on. Right? As soon as a person realizes one's mistake, he should surrender. Right? He should admit, seek forgiveness. Right? That will be to his best interest. Right? So therefore Lord Brahma is saying, do not underestimate his power. He can still revive everything, right, that has been destroyed. So read the, someone read the second paragraph. Actually,
the position of the subordinate is always to surrender to the Supreme. That is the instruction of Guru Ji. The Lord asks everyone to give up all kinds of concocted occupations and simply surrender to him. That will protect the conditioned soul from all sinful reactions. Similarly, in this case, Brahma also suggested that they go and surrender unto the Lotus Feet of Lord Shiva. For since he is very kind and easily satisfied, this action would prove effective.
Okay, so Prabhupada talks of Krishna asking everyone to surrender, right? And not postpone the surrender. And Prabhupada, I was just reading Prabhupada Lilamrit, and Prabhupada says, real religion means to surrender immediately, right? And not postpone the surrender. Right? So real religion means that which teaches us to surrender immediately. Right? So Lord Brahma is also asking them, you go and surrender. Right? Now that you realize your mistake, go and surrender to Lord Shiva. Text 8. Saitamadishya surana jastutai Samanvita pitra bhisa prajeshai Yayosudhishnya nilayam puradisha. Kailasamadri pravaram priyam prabho.
After thus instructing all the demigods, the pitas and the lords of the living entities, Lord Brahma took them with him and left for the abode of Lord Shiva, known as the Kailasa Hill.
Okay, so after thus instructing the demigods, the pitas and the lords of all living entities, like so all those who had come, the sages, priests and so on, Lord Brahma, he went along with them. Other it is mentioned, he took them with him. Right? Looks like they were still not fully convinced they should go and surrender. Lord Brahma said, okay, come behind me. Have no worries. Right? So Lord Brahma took them with him. Right? It's not that he also went, chalo, you go ahead, I'm also coming from behind, don't worry. Not like that, you know. There could also be great compassion of Brahma. Right? At least he's saying, okay, I'm also coming. But Lord Brahma saw this, looked like they're still apprehensive to go and surrender. So Lord Brahma personally led them. He said, okay, come with me. Come behind me at least. Right? We'll all go to Kailash Hill. So another important thing is Lord Brahma did not participate in committing offense. Right? He did not participate in committing offense. But he is participating in begging forgiveness. Right? Or he's a leader. He's leading them in begging forgiveness. Right? So even if one may not have committed the offense, still one can beg forgiveness. Right? Actually, so that requires humility also. Right? That requires humility also. Text 9. Okay, so 9 to 22. Is description of Kailash. 14 verses, 9 to 22, 14 verses describe Kailash, right? Mountain, Mount Kailash, where they all went, abode of Lord Shiva. Yes, so someone can just read the translations, 9 to 22.
The abode known as Kailash is full of different herbs and vegetables, and it is sanctified by Vedic hymns and mystic yoga practice. Thus the residents of that abode are demigods by birth and have all mystic powers. Besides them, there are other human beings who are known as Kinnaras and Gandharvas and are accompanied by their beautiful wives who are known as Apsaras or angels. Kailash is full of mountains filled with all kinds of valuable jewels and minerals and surrounded by all varieties of valuable trees and plants. The top of the hill is nicely decorated by various types of deer. There are many waterfalls, and in the mountains there are many beautiful caves in which the very beautiful wives of the mystics are found.
Okay, so if you see text 10 and 11, Nana, all the beginning word is Nana. Nana means various kinds. Nana Mani Mae, Nana Dhatu, Nana Dhruma, Nana Mriga. Right? Many kind of jewels, many kind of minerals. Dhruma means many kind of trees. Nana Mriga, many kind of animals. Nana Amala, Prasvange, many kind of waterfalls. Nana Kandar, many kind of beautiful caves, right? So in this way, you know, so many times the word Nana is used. Right? So a lot of variety of beautiful, you know, trees and so on has been described. Yes.
On Kailash Hill, there is always the rhythmical sound of the peacock's sweet vibrations and the bees humming. Cuckoos are always singing and other birds whisper amongst themselves. There are tall trees with straight branches that appear to call the sweet birds, and when herds of elephants pass through the hills, it appears that the Kailash Hill moves with them. When the waterfalls resound, it appears that Kailash Hill does also. The whole of Kailash Hill is decorated with various kinds of trees, of which the following names may be mentioned: Mandara, Parijat, Saral, Tamal, Tal, Kovidara, Asana, Arjuna, Amrajati, Mango, Kadamba, Dhuli Kadamba, Naga, Punnaga, Champak, Patal, Patal, Asoka, Bakula, Kunda, and Kurbaka. The entire hill is decorated with such trees, which produce flowers with fragrant aromas. There are other trees also which decorate the hill, such as the golden lotus flower, the cinnamon tree, Maluti, Kubja, Mallika and Madhavi. Kailash Hill is also decorated with such trees as Kata, jackfruit, Julara, banyan trees, Plaksas, Nagrodhas and trees producing Asphetida. Also there are trees of betel nuts and Bhurja Patra, as well as Rajpuga, blackberries and similar other trees. There are mango trees, Priyala, Madhuka and Inguda. Besides these, there are other trees like thin bamboos, Kichaka and varieties of other bamboo trees, all decorating the tract of Kailash Hill. There are different kinds of lotus flowers such as Kumuda, Utpala and Satapatra. The forest appears to be a decorated garden and the small lakes are full of various kinds of birds who whisper very sweetly. There are many kinds of other animals also like deer, monkeys, boars, lions, rikshas, salyakas, forest cows, forest asses, tigers, small deer, buffalo and many other animals who are fully enjoying their lives. There are varieties of deer such as Kannantra, Ekapad, Aswasya, Vrika and Kasturi, the deer which bears mugs. Besides the deer, there are many banana trees which decorate the small hillside lakes very nicely. There is a small lake named Alaknanda in which Sati used to take a bath, and that lake is especially auspicious. All the demigods, after seeing the specific beauty of Kailash Hill, were struck with wonder at the great opulence to be found there.
Okay, right. So that is description of the Kailash Hill. Right. One important point to be noted is that there is so much variety. Right. The names of so many trees are given, the names of so many flowers are given, the names of so many animals are given. Right. There is a great variety, or we can say diversity, right, on the Kailash Hill. Right. Many times, often, modern approach is you develop one kind of vertical. Right. This place is good for, like Maharashtra is known for growing sugar cane. Right. Acre and acre only sugar cane, grow only sugar cane, export sugar cane. Right. Right, export vividly, and then you have to eat wheat, that import wheat somewhere else where it goes, grows profusely. It is not. Right. So in this way, like many time often modern approach may be, you know, develop one vertical. Vertical, you understand? They say a particular thing, you are good at particular thing, develop that. Right? So what happens is that often creates a lot of imbalance and dependence. Right? So you are eating chapati, the wheat has come from 800 miles. Right? Another person is eating sugar cane, it has come from 1,000 miles. Right? And so on. Right? So it doesn't lead to a very good harmonious growth, right? A lot of dependence and so on. Right? Similarly, actually having, it's sometimes often difficult to sometimes accommodate diversity also. Right? But if there is a good amount of diversity, it may be little difficult to manage diversity in one sense. It's easy to manage when you have lesser diversity. Right? It's easy to manage the things and so on. But diversity is difficult to handle or manage sometimes, but it gives a wholesome growth. Right? Just like suppose someone is focusing on preaching, then if someone is just focused on cultivation of rich people, right? Someone focused only on college preaching, someone focused only on a particular kind of preaching, it doesn't lead to harmonious growth of the community. If there is a diversity in our preaching, we are preaching to all kind of people, students, ladies, elderly people, and so on, then the growth, right? Again I said, it's often difficult to handle diversity, because there are so many kind of people, they have different needs, you have to satisfy their needs, address their interests and concerns, and so many things, right? But, so therefore modern men often, or probably we may also often try to avoid diversity, because it's difficult to handle diversity because of the issues involved there could be. Right? But if we have good amount of diversity in whatever, when we try to develop our preaching, our community and so on, right? If there's a good diversity, then the growth is more harmonious. Growth is more harmonious. Right? So therefore, from Kailash, This is one environment lesson as well as community development lesson, right? That we should not try to reduce the diversity, right? Just because it's difficult to handle.
That the first time the demigods are approaching Kailas, and why this description is like, what I feel that is just like a description of the kingdom of Godhead. Like here also, you know, one planet, so it is an attract to us, to sadhak or a reader to know about Kailas, or demigod, first time they are going to the Kailas, so that they are getting astonished to seeing this beautiful. What is the utility of description, describe here?
Well, many of them could be going first time. Right? You know, the description is given of the beauty of the Kailash. As such, Bhagavatam gives that they are going to a place, you know, what did they observe, how beautiful the abode of Lord Shiva is. Right? So, in Ramayana, the description of beauty, when the Lord Ram entered Dandaka forest, there are two chapters devoted. Or he goes to a particular, you know, the description of Lanka when Hanumanji goes. There is a huge description you will find in many other scriptures given like that. Bhagavatam description is still, you know, just 14 verses. Other places I have seen 100 and 100 verses dedicated to describe the beauty of the place and so on, what is observed over there, how things. So Bhagavatam is still quite concise, right? Right? Still just few verses of how. This describes the opulence of the place where Lord Shiva lives. Right? Lord Shiva is also no ordinary personality. Right? So they are observing that, okay, the opulence of few loka is actually even greater than ours. Right? It is astonishing even to the demigods. Like that. So, especially there is a name, lake it's mentioned, that's known as Alakananda, where Sati used to bathe. And that lake is considered auspicious. Right? So, this was, is described in some of the commentaries, that this lake actually had a water, it was none other than Ganga water. Right? This lake was actually just another reservoir of water, which was the water of the mother Ganga. And Prabhupada said, yes, there is every possibility. Lord Shiva is holding Ganga on his own head. Right? So there is every possibility of accepting this lake having the water of mother Ganga. Like that. But it's mentioned that this lake had even become more auspicious. Right? Right? So therefore, because Mother Sati herself is a devotee of the Lord, so by her bathing, the significance or the auspiciousness of the lake had even further increased. No, that is Alakananda is a part of the one of the river also, but this lake in the abode of Lord Shiva was known as Alakananda. Right? Mother Ganga is also known as by the name of Alakananda and so on, but this lake is also known by that name. 23. Yeah, just we'll further read some of the translations because it's a. Read two more translations, yes.
Thus, the demigods saw the wonderfully beautiful region known as Alaka in the forest known as Saugandhika, which means full of fragrance. The forest is known as Saugandhika because of its abundance of lotus flowers. They also saw the two rivers named Nanda.
Wait. Yes. So, they also saw a beautiful region known as Alaka. And then again Prabhupada described that this Alaka is not the same as Alakapuri. Alakapuri is the abode of Kuvera. Right? But there is a region on Shivaloka also known as Alaka. In general, Alaka means something wonderful. Right? So therefore, there could many places may have the same name. Right? Alakapuri is another wonderful place of the capital of Kuvera. There is the Alaka place in the abode of Lord Shiva also. Especially mentioned is the forest where Sogandhika, where there were lotuses which had uncommon fragrance, right? Very sweet and divine fragrance of the lotus. So they also saw that forest, Sogandhika. Yes, 24.
They also saw the two rivers named Nanda and Alaknanda. These two rivers are sanctified by the dust of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda.
Okay. So there were another two rivers in Lord Shiva's abode, Nanda and Alaknanda, and they are also sanctified by the Lord's lotus feet. By Lord Govinda's lotus feet. Okay, 25. Yayo surastriya kshattar avruya sudhishnata kridanti pumsa sanchintyo vigaya ratikarshita.
My dear Chatta, Vidura, the celestial damsels come down to those rivers in their airplanes with their husbands, and after sexual enjoyment they enter the water and enjoy sprinkling their husbands with water.
Okay, so Prabhupada writes, it is understood that even the damsels of the heavenly planets are polluted by thoughts of sex enjoyment, and therefore they come in airplanes to bathe in the rivers, Nanda and Alaknanda. And also Prabhupada described that these two rivers are also sanctified by the dust of the lotus feet of Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he says, Ganga also is sanctified by being emanating from the Lord Lotus feet. So Prabhupada gives just a conclusion, if you see, in the same paragraph. So whenever water or anything is in touch with devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is purified and spiritualized. Okay? So anything that comes in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or anything that comes in touch with the devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? So touch of Bhagavan or touch of even bhakti, right, with devotional service, that spiritualizes everything. The rules and regulations of devotional service are based on this principle. Anything in touch with the lotus feet of the Lord is immediately free from all material contamination. And then Prabhupada continues, second paragraph. Read the second paragraph.
The heavenly planets, polluted by thoughts of sex life, come down to bathe in the sanctified rivers and enjoy sprinkling water on their husbands. Two words are very significant in this connection. Ratikarshita means that the damsels became morose after sex enjoyment. Although they accept sex enjoyment as a bodily demand, afterwards they are not happy.
Okay, so the beauty of this place and so on, the demigods come and they enjoy sex life, but actually they don't enjoy. Right? So this term actually is a misnomer sometimes. Right? Sometimes we say, oh, they enjoyed sex. But even the demigods, they are becoming morose. Right? So sex life seems to be giving enjoyment, but actually it is causing moroseness. Again, Prabhupada is writing, afterwards they are not happy. Right? Vigahya ratikarshita. Their enjoyment was diminished. Right? So no one actually enjoys, they only suffer sex life. Right? So another important word used in this or the last verse is Tirthapad Padambuja, right? Text 24. So Prabhupada comments upon these two verses together in the Purport of 25th. So he talks about the word Tirthapad. Tirthapad means a sanctified place. Right? Tirth means a sanctified place. Pad means the lotus feet. So therefore the lotus feet are known as Tirthapad because under their protection there are hundreds and thousands of saintly persons who sanctify the sacred places of pilgrimage. Right? So the word Tirthapad, you can understand, is that it is, there are two or three meanings of the word Tirthapad. One is, it is, the holy places are sanctified by the touch of Lord's lotus feet. Right? Why is a place considered holy? Because it has been touched by Lord's lotus feet, Tirthapad. And another meaning of Tirthapad is there are so many saintly persons, right, who have taken shelter of the Supreme Lord, right? Tirthapad means, Tirthas also means the saintly persons. So many saintly persons, when they take, those who have taken shelter of the Supreme Lord, they are residing in a place. Right? So many saintly persons who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, they reside in a place. That place also is called Tirthapad. Right? So Prabhupada continues by saying, Srila Narottam Das Thakur, a great acharya of Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, advises us not to travel to different places of pilgrimage. Right? So, first Prabhupada glorifies the places of pilgrimage, but then he gives a little different understanding. Srila Narottam Das Thakur is saying, he advises us not to travel to different places of pilgrimage. Undoubtedly, it is troublesome to go from one place to another, but one who is intelligent can take shelter of the lotus feet of Govinda and thereby be automatically sanctified as a result of his pilgrimage. Anyone who is fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Govinda is called Tirthapad. He does not need to travel on various pilgrimages, for he can enjoy all the benefits of such travel simply by engaging in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. So Narottam Das Thakur has written, Tirtha yatra parishrama kevalam nirabhram sarva siddhi govinda charana. Right? Tirtha yatra parishrama kevalam nirabhram. Right? All the labor of tirtha yatra is simply manirabhram, the hallucination of the mind. Sarva siddhi govinda charan. All perfection is obtained by service of Lord Govinda. No, it is one of the bhajans. Tirtha yatra parishram kevala manera brahm sarva siddhi govinda charan. Right? Of course, so Narottam Das Thakur is writing this, one should understand, in a context where people just wanted to go on tirtha yatra for the sake of gathering punya. Even if one is going to holy places to take shelter of Govinda, then that is never condemned. Right? In the association of devotees to hear a chant and glorify the Lord, that is never condemned. But in that, during the time he is writing this, people are often more interested in going to various places, right? Just in the parishram, so that they may gain a lot of piety and so on, right? But not really take shelter of the Lord, right? So the important thing is to take shelter of the Lord. Even one is going to the holy places, one should go to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Then Tirtha Yatra actually become successful, right? Because Tirtha Yatra in itself cannot be condemned, right? You see Lord Balram going on a pilgrimage, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled to so many holy places, right? But it would always be in a mood of taking shelter of the Lord. Navakumkuma pinjaram Mitrishtopi bantyamba Payayanto gajaggaji.
After the damsels of the heavenly planets bathe in the water, it becomes yellowish and fragrant due to the kumkum from their bodies. Thus, the elephants come to bathe there with their wives, the sea elephants, and they also drink the water, although they are not thirsty.
Right, so by the bathing of these heavenly damsels in the water of these rivers, Nanda and Alaknanda, the whole water becomes fragrant and sweetened. Right? Suvasit jal, right? Krishna is offered. Suvasit means fragrant water. And the elephant, they come to bathe and they drink the water because it's so fragrant. Although they may not be thirsty, but they like to drink still this water because of its sweet fragrance. 27. Yes. Vigahya Ratikarshita. Rati Karshita has been then further explained. Right? So we, from there is what Prabhupada is, right? Rati Karshita, that word is there which indicates that they had sexual enjoyment. Yeah. Tarhem Maharatna Imana Shatasankulam Justam Punya Janastribhir Yatakam Shatadirkanam.
The airplanes of the heavenly denizens are bedeck with pearls, gold, and many valuable jewels. The heavenly denizens are compared to clouds in the sky decorated with occasional flashes of electric lightning.
Okay, so read the last six lines of the purport, beginning with the beautiful airplanes. Last 5-6 lines.
The beautiful airplanes from the heavenly planets are compared here to the sky because they fly in the sky. The passengers are compared to the clouds. The beautiful damsels, the wives of the denizens of the heavenly planets, are compared to lightning. In summation, the airplanes with their passengers, which came from higher planets to Kailasa, were very pleasant to look at.
Hitva Yakshesvara Purim Vanam Saugandhikam Chatat Drume Kama Dugairidayam Chitra Malya Palachadai.
Travelling, the demigods passed over the forest known as Saugandhika, which is full of varieties of flowers, fruits and desire trees. While passing over the forest, they also saw the regions of Yakshesvara.
Right, Yakshesvara, who is Yakshesvara? Kuber. So Kuber, the board is also visible while they were flying over that forest. Right? So Kubera, the board was also visible. It's mentioned that Prabhupada says in the fourth line, it is also stated here that the forest were full of desire trees. Right? This Vanam Saugandhikam, there were many desire trees. And Prabhupada says, we in Brahma Samhita we learn about the desire tree which is found in the spiritual world, especially in Krishna Loka, the abode of Lord Krishna. We learn here that such trees are also found in Kailash, the residence of Lord Shiva, by the grace of Krishna. Right? So Krishna, he shares his opulences with his devotees. Lord Shiva is great Vaishnava, right? So on a Kailash also we find desire trees.
So why is there a lot of excess? Because we didn't, when we study the Ekka appearance from Brahma, created in second canto, and also Kubar also the son of the one Rishi, we didn't get that connection. Why Kubar is considered the master of all excess?
Why he is considered? He is the lord of all the yakshas.
No, I mean, say, when Brahma created all the yakshas, in that time also Kubera also took bath from this Evan of the first fourth canto, first chapter, just to regard that is. But I'm just connecting how, why actually that.
We well,
Kubera actually is the master of all yakshas.
No, I have no further information. Only that he is the lord of the yakshas. And that's it. Yakshesvara 29. Rakta Kanta Khaganika Swarmandita Shatpadam Kalhamsa Kulapreshtam Kharadanda Jalashayam.
In that celestial forest, there were many birds whose necks were colored reddish and whose sweet sounds mixed with the humming of the bees. The legs were evidently decorated with crying swans as well as strong-stemmed lotus flowers.
Okay, again, description of that Saugandhika forest in which there were desire trees There were many birds with the neck were color red, of the color red, and they had sweet sounds of the humming of the bees and so on. So read the middle of the purport considering all these attributes.
Considering all these attributes, one can imagine how beautiful this spot was and how much the demigods passing through enjoyed the atmosphere. There are many paths and beautiful spots created by men on this planet Earth, but none of them can surpass those of Kailasa as they are described in these verses.
Vanakunjara Sangrishta Hari Chandana Vayuna Adipunya Janastri Nam Muhur Unmathayan Mana.
All these atmospheric influences unsettle the forest elephants who flock together in the sandalwood forest, and the blowing wind agitated the minds of the damsels there for further sexual enjoyment.
Okay, so there is the description of the sandalwood forest, right? And the fragrance of the sandalwood forest would unsettle the elephants, and the blowing wind, wind was so fragrant that Muhur Unmathayan Mana, it would again agitate the minds of these heavenly beings for further sexual enjoyment. Right? So Prabhupada gives a contrast. That verse is there. Vaimani kasa lalana charitani shashvat gayanti yatra shamala shapanani bhartur antar jalenu vikasan madhu madhavinam gandhena khandit dhyo ape anilam shipanta. Right? You remember that verse? Gandhena khandit dhyo. They were beautiful. Even the fragrance in the Vaikuntha is even surpassing the fragrance of the heavenly planets. But their mind is not agitated. Right? Their mind still remain absorbed in glorifying the Lord. And they condemn for the some time if their mind is distracted by the sweet fragrance of the air, then they condemn that fragrance because they want to remain absorbed in glorifying. Then another verse, Yat Sankulam Haripada Niti Matra Drishta Vaidur Yamara Katahe Mamayar Vimane Yesham Brihat Kadita Das Mitashobhi Mukhya Krishnat Manam Naraja Adadurusmadhe. Yesham Brihat Kadi Tata Smita Shobhi Mukhya. The ladies there are far more beautiful, right, than these damsels of the heaven. Right? But Krishna Atma Nam Na Raja Adadur. There is no passion. They are not stimulated to passion because they are Krishna Atma Nam. Their minds are so fixed in Krishna. Right? So Prabhupada draws the contrast between the heavenly atmosphere and the spiritual atmosphere. Spiritual atmosphere is even more beautiful, even more fragrant. The ladies are even more beautiful. Right? Everything is of the superior quality, but their enjoyment is in glorifying the Lord. Right? Compared to the heavenly planet, where there is always the desire for sex. So Prabhupada quotes that verse, Yat Sankulam. He quotes the translation, right, in the middle of the purport. Vaidurya krita sopana vapya utpala malini praptam kim purushair drishtva to aradadrushurvatam.
They also saw that the bathing ghatas and their staircases were made of vaidurya mani. The water was full of lotus flowers. Passing by such lakes, the demigods reached a place where there was a great banyan tree.
Okay, so the bathing ghats of the lakes were made of vaidurya mani. Right? What is the bathing ghat? We can't even see one small gem nowadays. Right? So the original manis, the entire ghat is made of that kind of mani. Right? Water full of fragrant lotuses and so many. Right? The ara dadrushul vatam. And there was a great vatavriksh. Banyan tree. Right. And read the next translation.
that banyan tree was 800 miles high and its branches spread over 600 miles around. The tree cast a fine shade which permanently cooled the temperature, yet there was no noise of birds.
Right? 100 yojanas high. This banyan tree is 100 yojana high. So yojan, shato, utsedha, right? Padun, and less than 1/4 less, reduced 25%. That's how wide it was. Right? 25% less wide. That is 600 miles. So 800 miles high, 600 miles wide its branches were. Right? What kind of banyan tree is that? Right? And the tree cast fine shade which permanently cooled the temperature. Right? And there were no noise of birds. Right? There were no noise of birds, there were no nests, there were no bird droppings. Right? So that all the, everyone can, it was a, Prabhupada said it was a perfect place for meditation. Right? There was no noise, no bird droppings. It was like a Mahapandal. Right? There was a cool shade. It was very high also, no? So there were nice breezes also underneath. When you increase the height, the airflow increases. So, very cool, all the breezes were there, no noise, and perfect place for meditation, this huge banyan tree. So, maybe you can take 5-10 minutes shade of this banyan tree and we will continue.
The demigods are Lord Shiva sitting under their tree, which was competent to give perfection to mystic yogis and deliver all people. His grave is time eternal, he appeared to have given up all anger.
Okay, Hare Krishna. Tasmin Maha Yogamaye. So yoga means to connect with the Supreme, Maha Yoga means the greatest yoga, right? Maha also means the big, great, right? It's like Mahakola and so on, right? So, Mahayoga means the highest yoga, which is Bhakti Yoga, right? So, in this way, the devotees are Mahayogis, right? There are other yogis, but devotees are Mahayogis. Once in our ashram, we had started a yoga, right? A teacher used to come and teach yoga, and we used to serve fruit juice after the yoga, right? After the yoga is over. Some of the devotees who were not doing that yoga, they also came for drinking fruit juice, right? And they were asked, hey, come on, you have not done yoga, why have you come for fruit juice? They said, hey, we have chanted 16 rounds, is that not yoga? That is Mahayoga. We should get, right? So even that is not ordinary yoga, right? As Prabhupada is saying, Mahayoga means those who engage in devotional service of Vishnu, right? So devotional service is Mahayoga. The devotees are Mahayogis, the greater yogis. So it has been mentioned that under this tree, there were so many great yogis doing meditation, right? It was like 600 miles, right? So it's not, there were so many hermitages, yogis doing meditation under this tree. And the word Maha is derived from the word Mahat, Sanskrit word Mahat. Prabhupada describes that in the second paragraph, right? Which means great number. 34. Sanandanadhyar Mahasiddhe Shanta Samshanta Vigraham Upasyamanam Sakhyach Upasyamanam Sakhyach Bhartara Guhyaka Rakshasam.
Three persons like Kubera, the master of the Guhyakas, and the four Kumaras, who were already liberated souls, Lord Shiva was grave and saintly.
Okay, so Lord Shiva was sitting under this tree. He was very grave, like the time eternal it is mentioned. The last verse is Iva antakam tadrushur shivam asinam taktva marsham. He had given up all anger. Right? He was very grave. Was completely peaceful, in very meditative mood he was sitting, and no signs of anger, like a time eternal. He was so grave. Right? So the movements of the time are considered to be very grave. Imperceptible. Kalena gabhira ramhasa. Right? You have heard those terms. Kalena gabhira ramhasa. Kalena avyakta ramhasa. Right? So time is also is avyakt, is unmanifest form of the Lord. Time is also very grave. So that comparison is given. And another significant point made is Lord Shiva was sitting with many saintly persons. Among them sitting was Kuvera and also the four Kumaras. Right? See the wide spectrum. Kuvera is the richest person and in this material world. Kuvera, right? The treasure of the demigods. And four Kumaras do not even have clothes. Right? What to speak of anything else? Right? They have no possessions. Four Kumaras. So four Kumaras are sitting in the assembly of Lord Shiva. Right? Absolutely having nothing. And Kuvera, the highest, the richest, most person, is also sitting. So Prabhupada says it is significant that both Kuvera is sitting and four Kumaras are sitting. So Prabhupada points out in the last 3-4 lines, thus Lord Shiva's association with the Kumaras and Kuvera indicates that he has all transcendental and material opulences. Lord Shiva has all transcendental and material opulences. Right? Material opulences are represented by Kuvera, and all the transcendental opulences are represented by four Kumaras. Vidya tapo yoga patham astitam tam madhishvaram charantam vishvasuhridam vasalyaloka mangalam.
The demigods of Lord Shiva, situated in perfection, is the master of the senses, knowledge, fruitive activities in the path of achieving perfection. He was the friend of the entire world, and by virtue of his full affection for everyone, he was very auspicious.
Okay, so Lord Shiva has been described as Adhishwaram, and he is the master of the senses. And he is endowed with the perfection, or he is endowed with the power of vidya, tapah, yoga, right, and so on. And Lord Shiva has been described as Vishwasuhridam. He is the friend of the entire world. Vasalya Lokamangalam. He is very auspicious for the whole world. Right? Lokamangalam. So, read the purport.
Lord Shiva is full of wisdom and tapasya, austerity. One who knows the modes of work is understood to be situated on the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One cannot serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead unless one has achieved full perfectional knowledge in the ways and means of performing devotional service. Lord Shiva is described here as Adhishwara. Ishwara means controller. And Adhishwara means particularly controller of the senses. Generally, our materially contaminated senses are apt to engage in sense gratificatory activities. But when a person is elevated by wisdom and austerity, the senses then become purified and they become engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Shiva is the emblem of such perfection, and therefore in the scriptures it is said, Vaishnavanam yatha sambhu. Lord Shiva is a Vaishnava. Lord Shiva, by his actions within this material world, teaches all conditioned souls how to engage in devotional service 24 hours a day. Therefore, he is described here as Loka Mangala, good fortune personified for all conditioned souls.
Okay, so Lord Shiva is very auspicious. Right? There is a verse. Uh, Nimganam Yatha Ganga, right? We usually quote this only, Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu. It is 1/4 of the verse. Right? Nimganam Yatha Ganga, Devanam Achyuto Yatha. Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu, Purananam Idam Tatha. Right? The 12th canto verse. It says, among all the rivers, Mother Ganga, the highest, and among all the demigods, Lord Vishnu is the highest, among the Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva is the highest, among the Puranas, Idam, this one, right? Because of his word is written Bhagatam only, Purana Nam Idam Tatha, this Puran is the highest. So this verse describes Lord Shiva as best among the Vaishnavas. And Lord Shiva is auspiciousness personified because he teaches everyone, Prabhupada writes, how to engage in devotional service 24 hours a day. Right? So, especially, of course we understand how Lord Shiva is a great Vaishnava. He has a Rudra Sampradaya to his name. Right? He teaches devotional service. And when he comes at Advaitacharya, it becomes so evident. Right? So about Advaitacharya, in Adi Lila, 6th chapter, verse 12, it is written, Jagat Mangal Advaita Mangal Gunadham Mangal Charitra Sada Mangal Yaranam. Right? Jagat Mangal Advaita. He is very auspicious. Here the word Loka Mangalam is used. Right? So Advaitacharya has been described as Jagat Mangal Advaita Mangal Gunadham. All his qualities, his abode. Right? He's abode of all the auspicious qualities. Mangala Charitra, his characteristics or his character is very auspicious. And his name is all auspicious. Mangalyaranam. So in this way, Lord Shiva, who is a Vaishnava, who teaches everyone how to engage in devotional service, is supremely auspicious. Loka Mangalam. 6.12, Adi Leela, 6.12. And there are many verses which describe Advaitacharya, how he is supremely auspicious, supremely beneficial because he constantly preaches devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Right? So specifically, now Lord Shiva also takes care of, you know, how the people in the world of ignorance, when he comes as a Advaitacharya, his exclusive engagement is to preach devotional service. Right? Advaitam harinadvaitad acharyam bhakti shamshanat. Right? So that also has been described. He is not different from Lord Hari, and as Acharya he preaches devotional service. Text 36. Lingam chat tavasa bhishtam Bhasmadanda jata jinam Angena sandhya prarucha Chandra lekham chabhibhratam.
He was seated on a deer skin and was practicing all forms of austerity. Because his body was smeared with ashes, he looked like an evening cloud. On his hair was the sign of a half moon, a symbolic representation.
Okay, so Prabhupada points out Lord Shiva's symptoms of austerity are not exactly those of a Vaishnava. Right? Lord Shiva is certainly number one Vaishnava, but he exhibits a feature for a particular class of men who cannot follow the Vaishnava principles. Actually, it is mentioned in one of the Puranas how earlier Lord Shiva used to dress as a Vaishnava, right, with dhoti, kurta, tilak. So all the Ghoshli followers, they also started putting the same attire and doing all kind of nasty things. Right? So then Lord Brahma and others, they said, please, you know, if all your followers are wearing Vaishnava tilak, kanti mala and smoking ganja, you know, they will pollute all. No one will know who is a Vaishnava and who is upstart. Right? So then Lord Shiva, in order to, so all these ghostly followers may be separately recognized. Right? they may not mix up and create confusion and bring a bad name to the Vaishnavas. So Lord Shiva changed his attire, right? In a way that they can, because they will all follow him, and they can be separately recognized, right? So in, for their sake, Lord Shiva put all the crematorium ashes and so on. Yes. This is in one of the Puranas. I read in one of the articles quoting about Lord Shiva from the Puranas. So there is mentioned that Lord Shiva used to dress as a Vaishnava earlier, right? In the very beginning, right? Initially, but then it created a lot of problem, right? Social problem, right? and confusion. So Lord Shiva, he therefore changed his attire in order to not create any confusion. Upavishtam darbhamayam vrishyam brahma sanatanam narudaya pravochantam prichyate shinvatam satam.
He was seated on a straw mattress and speaking to all present, including the great sage Narada, to whom he specifically spoke about the absolute truth.
Right. So Lord Shiva was sitting on a straw mattress and he was speaking to all those who were present, especially Narada Muni was sitting. Right? And Narada Muni was inquiring about the absolute truth, and Lord Shiva was speaking to Narada Muni and all the other sages. Right? So read from line 3 in this verse.
It is specifically mentioned that he was speaking to the great sage Narada, a celebrated devotee. Narada was asking Lord Shiva about devotional service, and Shiva, being the topmost Vaishnava, was instructing him. In other words, Lord Shiva and Narada were discussing the knowledge of the Veda, but it is to be understood that the subject matter was devotional service. Another point in this connection is that Lord Shiva is the supreme instructor and the great sage Narada is the supreme audience. Therefore, the supreme subject matter of Vedic knowledge is bhakti or devotional service.
Okay, so Prabhupada is making the point that there is a supreme instructor and there is a supreme audience, Narada Muni, so they must be talking of the supreme subject. Right? Therefore, they were talking absolute truth, which is to be considered the supreme subject matter. Yes?
That on his hair was a sign of half moon, symbolic repentance. So this is a what I have heard that earlier, that when churning of the samudra, that the moon came and that moon gifted to the Lord Shiva.
Lord Shiva.
So that was occurred in the, I mean, say it's a fashionable time actually. In the this incident happening here, this is the first time, you know, the fashionable when he was king after Dhumaras. That's a and that.
So which you are saying happened before or which happened? So that was earlier. The Samudra Manthan was.
Well, I mean say before Samudra Manthan, that is, moon didn't come, and moon is not gifted to the Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva was bereft of the half script. so what is, see, actually that's to know actually the link. Actually, I'm thinking that.
No, it's sometimes like it said, even the Lord Krishna's shank was gifted at a particular point of time. Right? Lord Krishna's shank panjanya was gifted by Shankachuda or something from the. Right? He killed a demon, Panchajanya, and then that became Lord, you know, Krishna's counsel. So that is described that it is the way the things manifest. Sometimes these lords, Krishna always has, he has always this shankha with him, but in the manifest pastime, he gets it in a different way. Right? It becomes like a story. It manifests like this. Right? So we can, you're understanding the point. So it becomes one of the pastimes that how he acquired it. Although he already, Lord Krishna always has this shankha or his weapon. Sometimes it is described he got this weapon in this way. It just, the way it manifests in a particular yuga, Right? Although those weapons are always with him. So it's to be understood like that also.
And Prabhuji, that in the 34 verse, the Prabhupada purport said, the four Kumaras is very close to Lord Shiva because they're both fighting, and in that time, you know, Lord appeared, so that's...
So Prabhupada gives that they have a connection, Prabhupada says.
Yeah.
Because Lord, four Kumaras are sitting and Shiva is sitting.
So
when Brahma had got angry at four Kumaras, they refused to progenate. So that time Lord Shiva was born, right, out of anger of Brahma. Again, Rudra is eternal principle, he manifests like that. Okay. It's not that Rudra is born for the first time, before that he's not there. You understanding the point?
Yeah, yeah.
So it is in the particular way Lord Rudra or Shiva manifests in this particular creation. Right? So like that. So Prabhupada says...
Actually, from that, actually, what I'm saying, look, yeah. There is one point, actually, it was there. Between fighting two sampradaya, then another sampradaya came out, like Brahma sampradaya and Kumar sampradaya there. Then fighting, then Rudra sampradaya came out. So can I justify it? Love?
At least in ISKCON, many temples came out like that. I don't know. Disciples of Prabhupada would have a conflict and Prabhupada said, okay, you go there, you go there. Right? If the disciple would have kind of Prabhupada use their conflicting nature for the purpose of creation. Right? As such. I cannot comment upon the sampradayas, you know. But at least Prabhupada used that conflicting nature of his disciples for the purpose of creation of more ISKCON temples. You can't get along, you open your own temple. You can't get along, you go to your another city, open another temple. That's all like strategically Prabhupada used. Okay. Yes. Oh, hai kya aap log ke paas? Yeah. Isme look it. Do you see the?
Metal
one. Can someone point out? Kailash, location of Kailash. Okay, little bit. Yeah.
Actually, this is the actually most ground. This is the Kailash.
Okay, between the.
Yeah, this is the Brahmajyoti.
Below Sadashiv Loka and
Mahakal Dham.
Mahakal Dham. So it's in between the spiritual world and the periphery of spiritual and material world. Yes. So, okay. So, anyway, keep it. Even just Kailash is there, originally situated just below the, you know, the border of the material and spiritual world. But abode of Lord Shiva is there in the greater Himalayas also, which is there in the the greater Himalayas are in the so basically in the Bharatvarsha there is a smaller Himalayas which we experience here, but there are greater Himalayas also which has been described at 800 miles high. Our Himalayas are only 8 miles, right? The topmost peak average is 8 miles or so. But 800 miles high Himalayas are described just within the same Jambudvipa, right? There are 9 varshas. So in the between this our varsha and the next varsha, right, there are greater Himalayas being described in the 5th canto. There also there is the abode of the Lord Kailash, and within, you know, there is a Kailash Mansarovar known as within our Himalayas also. So these abodes also, they are, you know, they manifest at various places also, right? So that is one, just below spiritual world, but within the material world also, just like within the material universe, there are abodes of Lord Vishnu, right? We know there is Shvetadeep, there is Vaikunth, within where four Kumaras went, within the material world. Similarly, within the material world also, within that sphere also, the Shivaloka manifests. In all probability, Lord Brahma and others, they are going to a Shivaloka which is very well within the material world. Right? Because they are not crossing all the layers of the universe and all that, and going all the way up there. Right? Just like there is a Vaikuntha within, so there is a abode of Shiva also within the material world and so on. So, they are going somewhere in the material world. Here, in the greater Himalayas, there is Shivaloka and all that also. Fine, so text 38. Kritvorau dakshine savyam padapadmam cha januni bahum prakoshtekshamalam asinam tarakamudraya.
His left leg was placed on his right thigh, and his left hand was placed on his left thigh. In his right hand, he held Rudraksh beads. This sitting posture is called Virasana. He sat in the Virasana posture, and his finger was in the mode of argument.
Okay, so you'll see the photo of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva sitting. You must have in your book. Open it. Can you see the photo? Plate 5. This has plate 5. Yes, I had. Someone can. Yeah, you can see? Those who have books, they can see this photo. Lord Shiva sitting, Narad Muni sitting in front of him. Lord Shiva sitting in a Tarka Mudra. Right, his left foot is over his right thigh. So that is the description being given of the Lord Shiva. And you see how his hand is. Fingers are a little bit open, he's making a point like this. That is known as Tarka Mudra. Right? You see how Lord Shiva's hand. So all that is being described. Read the sixth line. Practicing of these asanas.
Practice of these asanas without elevating oneself to the position of realizing the super soul, Vishnu, is not the perfectional stage of yoga. Lord Shiva is called Yogeshwara, the master of all yogis, and Krishna is called Yogeshwara. Yogeshwar indicates that no one can surpass the yoga practice of Lord Shiva, and Yogeshwar indicates that no one can surpass the yogic perfection of Krishna. Another significant word is Tarka Mudra. This indicates that the fingers are opened and the second finger is raised along with the arm to impress the audience with some subject matter. This is actually a symbolic representation.
Okay, so Prabhupada is just making a distinction between Yogeshwara and Yogeshwara. Right? Primarily saying Lord Shiva is the master of all the yogis, and Krishna, no one can surpass him in yoga practice, that is Yogeshwara. Yogeshwara means no one can surpass Krishna in yogic perfection. Right? Like that. So practice, yoga practice, master of all yoga practice is Lord Shiva, master of all yogic perfection is Lord Krishna. That is being, that's how it is described in the purport. Yes. Well, anyone knows? Tulsi beads? Shinaji Sampradaya. That comes in Rudra Dwara. Rudra Sampradaya. So Lord Shiva, Rudraksh. Rudra Sampradaya. So Rudraksh beads are used mainly by Shaivites, not Vaishnavas. 39. Tam Brahma Nirvana Samadhim Ashritam Vipashritam Girisham Yoga Kaksham Saloka Pala Munayo Manunam Adhyam Manum Pranjalaya Pranemu.
All the sages and demigods headed by Indra offered their respectful obeisances unto Lord Shiva with folded hands. Lord Shiva was dressed in saffron garments and absorbed in trance, thus appearing to be the foremost of all sages.
Read the first paragraph.
The word Brahmananda is significant. This Brahmananda or Brahma Nirvana is explained by Prahlad Maharaj. when one is completely absorbed in the Adhoksaja, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the sense perception of materialistic persons, one is situated in Brahmananda.
Okay, so like sometime Prabhupada was criticized, why he has named his disciple as Brahmananda, right? So Prabhupada explained that Brahma also refers to Krishna, who is Supreme Brahman, and when one fixes his mind upon Krishna, he experiences Brahmananda. Right? It just doesn't mean the bliss of impersonal Brahman. Right? So Brahman indicates Krishna, and complete absorption in Krishna is also known as Brahmananda. Right? So Prabhupada has explained also at another place that Brahmananda also refers to the ananda of devotional service. Like that. Another significant word is yoga kaksham, right, third paragraph. Vipashtam girisham yoga kaksham. Yoga kaksha is the sitting posture in which the left thigh is fixed under one's tightly knotted saffron colored garment. Right, so Lord Shiva was wearing saffron colored garment. Also the words manunam adhyam are significant here. So lokapala munayo manunam adhyam manum pranjalaya panemu. So the word manunam adhyam are significant here because they mean a philosopher or one who is thoughtful, and one can think very nicely, right? And can think very nicely. Such a man is called Manu. Right? Manu means thoughtful person. Right? Manu means a person who can think about spiritual reality. That person is called Manu. Lord Shiva is described in this verse as chief of all thinkers. Right? What does he think? Prabhupada says Lord Shiva does not engage in useless mental speculation. But as stated in the previous verse, he is always thoughtful regarding how to deliver the demons from their fallen condition of life. Right? So another meaning of being thoughtful is always thinking how to deliver the fallen conditioned souls. Right? That is the best manan. Right? Manu means a thinker. Lokagati dekhi acharya karunaridai. Vichara karen lokera kaise hit hai. Right? It's also mentioned again in the Adi Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lokagati dekhi, when you saw the fallen condition, acharya karuna hridaye, vichara karen lokera kaise hit hai. He was thinking, how can the people be benefited? Right? And that's what Prabhupada describes over here. He is always thoughtful regarding how to deliver the demons from their fallen conditions of life. It is said during the advent of Lord Chaitanya, Sadashiva appeared as Advaita Prabhu. And Advaita Prabhu's chief concern was to elevate the fallen conditioned soul to the platform of devotional service to Lord Krishna. And Prabhupada further says, actually Lord Chaitanya appeared on the request of Lord Advaita. Similarly, Lord Shiva has a sampradaya, the Rudra sampradaya. He is always thinking about the deliverance of the fallen souls as exhibited by Advaita Prabhu. Right? So there are so many verses about Advaita Charya. Another verse, Lokanishtari la Krishna bhakti karidan. Right? He delivered everyone by giving the charity of devotional service. Lokanishtari la Krishna bhakti karidan. Gita Bhagavata kaila bhakti ra vyakhyan. He explained Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in the light of devotional service. Advaita Charya Prabhu. So in this way there are many many quotations in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about the compassion of Advaita Charya Prabhu, who is none other than Lord Shiva. Text 40. Satupalabhya Gatamatma Yonim Sura Suresher Abhivanditangrihi Uttaya Chakre Shirasabhivandanam Arhattamakasya Yathaiva Vishnuhu.
Lord Shiva's lotus feet were worshipped by both the demigods and demons, but still, in spite of his exalted position, as soon as he saw that Lord Brahma was there among all the other demigods, he immediately stood up and offered him respect by bowing down and tossing his lotus feet, just as Bamandeva offered his respectful obeisances to Kashyap Muni.
Okay, so Lord Shiva, as soon as he saw that Lord Brahma has come along with other demigods, he stood up, offered him respect. He bowed down to Lord Brahma, touching his lotus feet. Right? So in this way, Lord Shiva respected Lord Brahma, just as Vamandeva offered his respectful obeisance to Kashyap Muni. Right? So Lord Shiva, in this manifest pastime, he has appeared from Lord Brahma. Right? Lord Brahma is his father. Right? So therefore, it's the duty of the son to offer obeisance to his father. Lord Krishna would offer obeisances. Right? As Vamandeva would offer obeisance to Kashyap Muni, as Krishna, he would offer obeisances to Vasudev, and as Lord Ram, he would offer his obeisance to Dashrath Maharaj, and so on. Right? So although Lord Shiva is exalted because Shiva Tattva is more exalted, considered, right? Although, just like Vishnu Tattva is always, you know, Lord Vamadev is offering his respect to Kashyap Muni being father, but we understand that the Lord, he is more exalted than his father, right? Kashyap Muni. Right? But in this manifest pastime, socially, Lord Brahma is the father, so it's duty to offer respect to one's father. So although Lord Shiva is constitutionally being Shiva Tattva is higher than Lord Brahma, who is a Jiva Tattva, but in this, from the social point of view, or this manifest point of view, Lord Brahma is the father. So it is duty to offer obeisances. Tatha pare siddha gana maharshibhir yavai samantadanu neela lohitam namaskrita praha shashanka shekharam krita pranamam prahasannivatmabhu.
All the sages who were sitting with Lord Shiva, such as Narada and others, also offered their respectful obeisances to Lord Brahma. After being so worshipped, Lord Brahma, smiling, began to speak to Lord Shiva.
Read the purport.
Lord Brahma is smiling because he knew that Lord Shiva is not only easily satisfied, but easily irritated as well. He was afraid that Lord Shiva might be in an angry mood because he had lost his wife and had been insulted by Daksha. In order to conceal this fear, he smiled and addressed Lord Shiva as follows.
Right, so Lord Brahma is just smiling, right? In case the Lord Shiva is angry, you know, then he may be comforted by a smile, right? Just to lighten the mood of the situation, right? If someone is in a critical mood, but you smile sometime, he also, his heart may also be, you know, become light. And the whole overall mood may, big tense situation, whole destruction of sacrifice has taken place, right? So in order to lighten the spirit, similarly Vasudev smiled, right, at Kamsa. Kamsa was so fearful of his death and he wanted to kill Devaki, right? So just to lighten the mood, he was actually a very tense mood, he was internally fearful, Vasudev, but he smiled, right? Brahmo uvacha jane tvamisham vishvasya jagato yoni bijayo shakte shivasya chaparam yattad brahma nirantaram.
Lord Brahma said, my dear Lord Shiva, I know that you are the controller of the entire material manifestation, the combination father and mother of the cosmic manifestation, and the supreme Brahman beyond the cosmic manifestation as well. I know you in that way.
Okay, so Lord Brahma actually is glorifying Lord Shiva. Right? He is glorifying him that you are the both the Prakriti and the Purusha. Jane tvam isham vishvasya jagato yoni. Right? Isham vishvasya and jagato yoni bijayo. So you are both the Prakriti and the Purusha. And you are also the Supreme Brahman who is beyond Prakriti and Purusha. Right? So in this way, Lord Brahma glorifies Lord Shiva. So we will see in this set of prayers that Lord Brahma highly glorifies Lord Shiva. As if like he is the supreme, right? You see, it will look like Lord Shiva is the supreme personality. But Prabhupada describes at another place, there are places where Lord Shiva is glorified like that. So Prabhupada very nicely described, he said Lord Shiva is the supreme in the representative sense. Right? This is a very important line to understand. that Lord Shiva, who is representing right, Krishna in the material world, or Prabhupada says he is the supreme personality of Godhead in this material world, right? Or he is the supreme personality in this material world, right? Prabhupada uses those terms if you see, or he is the supreme personality in a representative sense. Just like government may send a diplomat, right? And he can exert all the power of a government, right? So he's a person who is representing the government, he is also like a supreme. In a representative sense, right? Not in the absolute sense. That is the important distinction. In a representative sense, Lord Shiva is the supreme. So therefore, that is one thing. So therefore, Lord Brahma is glorifying. Also, Lord Brahma, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur described that he speaks these verses taking the mentality of a Shaivite. Right? So the Shaivites consider they consider Prakriti and Purusha as the form of Sadashiv. So he takes the mentality of Shaivite because Lord Brahma kind of, he has a particular purpose to be fulfilled behind these prayers. Right? It's not that out of spontaneous devotion Lord Brahma has appeared. Right? He has appeared to settle a dispute. Right? So therefore, like in the mentality of a Shaivite, he glorifies Lord Shiva just like so that he may be pacified. Right? So there is a purpose to be fulfilled through the prayers that has to be kept in mind. Right? And secondly, Lord Shiva is the supreme in a representative sense. So by these two, in these two ways we should understand this set of prayers of Lord Brahma. Tvameva bhagavannetach shiva shaktyo sarupayo vishvam srajasi pashyatsi kridan unna pato yatha.
My real Lord, you create this cosmic manifestation, maintain it and annihilate it by expansion of your personality, exactly as a spider creates, maintains and winds up its web.
Okay, so tum eva bhagavan netar shiva shaktyo sarupyo vishvam srajasi pashe yatsi kridan unna pato yatha. Such prayers are offered to the Supreme Lord, we know that. Okay. So in the representative sense, all that is applies to Krishna also applies to Lord Shiva in this material world specifically. So read the purport.
The word shiva shakti is significant. Shiva means auspicious and Shakti means energy. There are many types of energies of the Supreme Lord and all of them are auspicious. Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwar are called guna avataras or incarnations of material qualities. In the material world, we compare these different incarnations from different angles of vision. But since all of them are expansion of the Supreme auspicious, all of them are auspicious. Although sometimes we consider one quality of nature to be higher or lower than another, the mode of ignorance or tamoguna is considered very much lower than the others, but in the higher sense it is also auspicious. The example may be given herein that the government has both an educational department and criminal department.
Okay, right. So now educational department is considered higher, right? There will be a lot of news, more fund may be allocated to education department, so on. So it's considered in general very auspicious, and criminal department is considered inauspicious department in one sense, right? From one perspective. But if you take a broader perspective, both departments are there to create auspiciousness, right? From a broader perspective. The purpose of, or the broader purpose of both the departments is to create auspiciousness, right? Although education department, there may be a lot of auspicious activities taking place, and within the prison department, there may be inauspicious activity taking place, punishing criminals, beating, whatever, you know. These are not very auspicious activities as such, from the activities or, you know, the daily activities point of view. But the overall purpose, when you see, of both criminal department or education department, overall purpose is to create auspiciousness, right? So they, if you look at the broader perspective of all the three, the incarnation of all the three gunas, they all are meant to create auspiciousness, right? Although from the immediate perspective, mode of goodness is to be considered auspicious, right? Lesser passion and even least is tamagun. But from a broader, higher perspective, they are all meant to create auspiciousness. So that is explained beautifully by Prabhupada. Tum. Right. Lato ke bhoot paato se nahi mante, right? You heard that statement, right? So somewhere paato se hi is Raitiola Prabhu is saying, at place education department is baaton se, while jail department is laaton se, right? But somehow to bring them to the right track, right? Right path. Someone may come by speaking, other person may have to be kicked to bring him onto the right path. Right? Kicking may be considered unauspicious, but ultimate path is auspicious. Right? Like that. 44. Tameva dharmarth dugabhipattaye dakshena sutrena sasarjithadvaram sasarjithavaram tuyeva loke vasitascha setavo yan brahmana shaddha shaddhadate dhritavrata.
My real Lord, your Lordship has introduced the system of sacrifices through the agency of Daksha, and thus one may derive the benefits of religious activities and economic development. Under your regulative principles, the institution of the four varnas and ashramas is respected. The Brahmanas therefore vow to follow this system strictly.
Okay, so now Brahma, having glorified Lord Shiva as a supreme representative within this material world in the last two verses, now gives six reasons from text 44 to 49. Right? In the six verses, he gives six reasons why Lord Shiva should forgive the demigods and he should revive the yajna. Right? Because that is the ultimate purpose of Lord Brahma coming. Right? So therefore, he doesn't say that you should do, but he gives various arguments. He builds up a case, right, on behalf of the demigods, or he is also the father of everyone and a very responsible administrator for the well-being of universe. So Lord Brahma gives six reasons in the six verses for Lord Shiva to practice forgiveness and revive the sacrifice. So what is the reason given in this particular verse? In this verse, Lord Brahma is saying, first is for the protection of Varnashrama, institution which has been created by you. Right? You should protect the Varnashrama institution that has been created by you. And for the protection of Varnashrama, one has to again start a system of sacrifice. Right? Or sacrifice is an important part. Therefore, one has to revise the sacrifice. Although explicitly not stated, but just a point is being made in this verse that your lordship has introduced a system of sacrifices through the agency of Daksha. Right? So that one may derive benefit from religious activity and economic development. Under your regulatory principle, the institution of four Varnashrama is respected. The Brahmana therefore vow to follow this system strictly. Right? So therefore, implicit, although he is not saying explicitly, implicitly Brahmaji is saying the system of Varnashrama has to go on, so for that Daksha should be revived and the sacrifice must continue. Right? So that the Varnashrama system may go on. So we are saying you only have created this, under your regulatory principles only Varnashrama is respected and so on. So, Brahmaji here wants to say that since Daksha is now dead, therefore there is no one to initiate Dharma. Right? So Daksha was like a yajman, all these various sacrifices, yajñas are the path of religion. So since Daksha is not dead, there is no one to initiate Dharma. And with the destruction of Dharma, there will be misfortune for the whole world.
Is it possible
two
or two, one?
Sorry?
Is it possible one argument?
One. Every verse, one we will... Yeah, every 6 verses, 6 points. Now, within 1 point, you can always make sub-points if you want, in that sense. But we are just saying that in his 6 verses, he makes 6 points. So, revival of Varnashrama. And Prabhupada writes in the 5th line of the purport, the tendency in this age of Kali to make a classless society and not observe the principle of Varna and Ashrama is a manifestation of an impossible dream. And again, in the beginning of the purport only, Prabhupada says that the Vedic system of Varna and Ashrama is never to be neglected. For these divisions are created by the Supreme Lord Himself for the upkeep of social and religious order in human society. Right? So this is Varnashrama is for the upkeep of social and religious order in human society. Right? This of course, you know, again, if you see, you know, different perspectives are given at different time. I'm just want to broaden your perspective. This Varnashrama is very important for the conditioned soul, right? Especially for the conditioned soul, because most of the souls in this material world are conditioned by the three modes of material nature, right? When we say conditioned soul, that means conditioned by the qualities of the three modes. So for the conditioned soul, Varnashrama is actually important for the upkeep of social and religious. But Chaitanya Charitamrita describes Varnashrama Dharma as Kaitab Dharma. Right? So, although it is important, and Prabhupada also writes in another place in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Deho Bahye Varnashrama Charvata. Right? What is the next line? Varnashrama Charvata. Purushena Parapuman Vishnu Raradhyate Pantha Nanyatattosha Karanam. So Prabhupada also described that all these dharmas are materially motivated dharmas or materially contaminated dharmas. Right? Varnashrama is also, there are a lot of material motivations in that dharma. It's not a spotless dharma. So Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Agyana Tamera Nam Kahiye Kaitab. Right? Agyan, what is Kaitab Dharma? Agyan, that which keeps the conditioned soul in agyan, ignorance of is pure true constitutional position, right? Agyan. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha, vancha, adi, sab, right? So all that dharma, artha, kama, moksha of which being talked, right? Here Lord Brahma is saying, let Daksha introduce dharma so that people may live happily and they may have, you know, with the cooperation of demigod, have artha to enjoy. So Pichitanita Amri says it's all ketab, it's all cheating dharmas, right? So from the cheating dharma, from the perspective of pure devotional service, right? That's from a very high perspective, right? But the conditioned souls who are suffering so much misfortune, it is for them, from them, Varnashram Dharma is not cheating dharma, it's elevating them. Just like we are saying, from one perspective, something, this place is very low, from, if you stand there. If you are here, this place is quite high, right? This level is very low from the roof point of view, if you see from the roof, but if you are on the ground, it's quite a elevated platform, right? So therefore, Varnashrama, which is described as a Ketab Dharma also, right? Cheating, because the cheating means it cheats the soul of this pure propensity to love Krishna, right? So therefore, because in general, in ordinary Varnashram Dharma, devotional service to Krishna is not the main focus, it's Dharma Artha Kam, at max moksha, right? So which says this is Ketab, Dharma Artha Kam Moksha Vancha Adi Sab, right? But conditioned souls need this dharma. They need this platform for them to have us to gradually elevate themselves. So I am just giving you perspective here. What Lord Brahma is saying, that you should, Varnashrama has to be revived, right? It's important for Varnashrama to be revived. But from the point of pure spirit soul, pure devotional service, this is the Ketab Dharma. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given Devi Varnashram. Devi Varnashram means Varnashram with a transcendental focus. Devi means transcendental, right? So the focus is not just dharma, artha, kama, moksha. In Devi, the main focus is have a conducive lifestyle, but focus on the activities of pure devotional service. Right. So therefore, the simple principle is we should accept the principles of Varnashram which doesn't conflict with the principle of pure devotional service. Right? All those principles which are conducive to the pure devotional service, they should be adopted. You're getting the point? So that is, the focus should remain pure devotional service. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given a variant of a Varnashrama, which is Devi Varnashrama, which is, the focus is transcendental, the goal is transcendental. Although Varnashrama also aims at that one may transcend the modes of, but that's not the focus. Devotion is not the focus.
So to practice Devi Varnashrama, farm communities are not required. In the city also you can practice.
Well, that's a bigger discussion. I'll not go into that. That will be too much digression from the main topic. Some other time. Tam karmana mangala mangalanam kartu salokam tanushes soparamva अमंगलानां चतमिश्रमुल्बनम् विपर्ययाकेन तदेव कस्यचित्।
ओ मोस्ट ऑस्पिशियस लॉर्ड, वी हैव ऑर्डेन्ड द हेवनली प्लैनेट्स, द स्पिरिचुअल वैकुंठ प्लैनेट्स एंड द इम्पर्सनल ब्राह्मण स्फीयर एज द रिस्पेक्टिव डेस्टिनेशंस ऑफ द परफॉर्मर्स ऑफ ऑस्पिशियस एक्टिविटीज। सिमिलरली फॉर अदर्स हु आर मिस्क्रिएंट्स, वी हैव डेस्टाइंड डिफरेंट काइंड्स ऑफ हेल्स which are horrible and ghastly. Yet, sometimes it is found that their destinations are just the opposite. It is very difficult to ascertain the cause of this.
Okay, so the second point, Lord Shiva is saying, Tum karmanam, we have established the law of karma, Mangala Mangalanam, for the all-round benefit, right? For the auspiciousness. And what is the law of karma? A person who is pious, he is promoted. Person who is impious, he is punished. Right? Viparaya ken, Lord Brahma is saying, but why is the opposite happening in this case? Right? Right? So, of course, he may have offended you, but he is not sinful. Right? Daksha is religious person. Right? He is initiator of various sacrifice dharma. There have been, he may have committed some offense, but he is not like outrightly sinful. Right? So therefore, second reason is saying that by your own rules, by your rules which are for the auspiciousness, Daksha who is a pious, he should not be punished in such a way. Right? So that is the second argument Lord Brahma is giving. Right? And Vishnu Thakur says that when Brahma is saying what is opposite happening, he also kind of, Vishnu Thakur says, why is that Ajamil was promoted and Daksha is being punished? Right? Ajamil was very sinful. He was promoted. Daksha is being punished. Who is, right? Brahma is saying, I'm just curious to know about this. Right? Why is this happening? Or in order to say that this should not happen. Right? Daksha doesn't deserve so much punishment because he's after all pious, although he may have committed a mistake. So that's the second reason Lord Brahma gives. So, but Prabhupada gives quite a transcendental perspective in the purport. Prabhupada gives, he writes similarly, if you see in the middle of the purport, right, just above, 4 or 5 lines above the verse, Tattenukampam. Similarly, King Daksha was always engaged in the pious activities of performing sacrifices. Yet simply because of creating a little misunderstanding with Lord Shiva, he was severely taken to task. The conclusion is therefore that the supreme will is the ultimate judgment. No one can argue upon this. A pure devotee therefore submits in all circumstances to the supreme will of the Lord. Right? So Prabhupada is saying that just submit to the will of the Lord. Prabhupada says, Tattenu kambam susamikshamana. The purport of this verse, Tattenu kambam, is that when a devotee is in a calamitous condition, he takes it as a benediction of the Supreme Lord and takes responsibility himself for his past misdeeds. In such a condition, he offers still more devotional service and is not disturbed. One who lives in such a disposition of mind, engaged in devotional service, is the most eligible candidate for promotion to the spiritual world. Right? So Prabhupada gives a devotee, even if a devotee is sometime punished and so on, a devotee should not complain. He should accept the will of the Lord and continue to render devotional service. Right? So Prabhupada gives a transcendental perspective to the situation. Na vaisatam tat charanarpitatmanam bhuteshu sarveshu vipashyatam tava bhutani chatmanya prithak didikshatam prayena rosho abhibhavedyatha pashum.
My dear Lord, devotees who have fully dedicated their lives unto your lotus feet certainly observe your presence as Paramatma in each and every being, and as such they do not differentiate between one living being and another. Such persons treat all living entities equally. They never become overwhelmed by anger like animals who can see nothing without differentiation.
Okay, so in the last verse, Lord Brahma is saying that you have made the rules, but why, I am just curious to know why the opposite happens sometimes, right? Law of karma there, pious are promoted, impious are punished. Why the opposite happens sometimes? So Lord Shiva, he replies, the cause could be my anger or my mercy, right? No, you are certain, Lord Shiva tells Lord Brahma, the cause could be my anger or my mercy. So Brahma is saying, actually it cannot be your anger. And Lord Brahma gives the reason in this verse. He said, devotees who take shelter of a lotus feet, even they do not generally become angry. Prayena rosho abhibhaved yatha pashum. Even they generally do not become angry like animals. Right? So the animals, if something unpleasant happens, they immediately become angry. Right? Or animalistic people, anything unpleasant happens, they immediately become angry. Right? So therefore, saying no, the cause could not be your anger, because even your devotees generally do not become angry like animals. Why the word generally is used? Sometimes they become angry. Right. Sometimes they become angry, but when they become angry, that anger is their mercy. Right? That anger is their mercy, and they do not become angry out of frustration. So therefore, Lord Brahma says, when he says, I am very curious to know why, you know, Daksha is getting the opposite result. So therefore, Lord Brahma says, actually, this is due to your mercy. Right? So the punishment he has received is due to your mercy. So now, please extend your mercy further and revive him. Now, right? You have shown your mercy. Please further show your mercy by reviving Daksha and reviving the sacrifice. Right? So Lord Brahma here appeals to the mercy of Lord Shiva.
Koimutika Naya. Like, in the Vidur also, when I explain about the Lord's merciful nature of Putana, that also this Naya is called Koimutika Naya. If somebody comes in negative also, but he gives it to
me. Vishwanath Thakur also talks of Kaimutik Naya in one of this.
In this verse.
Yeah. So Kaimutik Naya is Kim Muta. If your devotees do not generally become angry, how can you become angry? Right? So that is the Kaimutik Naya over in this verse. Fine, so what I'll do, I'll just complete this 6 things because the time is less. At the end of the class, we can discuss. Right? Because I want to complete the chapter. Fine, so the third thing is, he's saying your punishment to him is not out of your anger, it is due to your mercy. Now further show your mercy. Right? Let the mercy not stop over there. 47. Prithak dhiya karma drisho durashaya. Paro daye narpita ridrujo nisham. Parandurakter vitudantir arundutas. Tan madhavid deva vadhan bhavadvida.
Persons who observe everything with differentiation, who are simply attached to fruitive activities, who are mean-minded, who are always pained to see the flourishing condition of others, and who thus give distress to them by uttering harsh and piercing words, have already been killed by providence. Thus there is no need for them to be killed again by an exalted personality like you.
Right? So he's saying now you should revive, right? That has been your mercy, right? Your punishment has been your mercy, now you can revive. If Lord Shiva says, but you know, it's my duty to give punishment. Because if I do not give punishment, then everyone will become sinful. Right? Out of my duty, I give punishment. So Lord Brahma says, actually, the people who have the vision of differentiation, right? That means they do not see the devotional service of the Supreme. They are durashaya. They are evil-minded people. Right? And they inflict pain upon others and so on. They are already being punished by their own sins. Right? In the form of the law of karma, the providence. Right? So they will be anyway punished. Though there is no need for you also to give punishment. So by their offenses, they have already been killed by the laws of karma. You should not kill them, because if they become the object of your anger, Vishwanath Thakur says, they will never have a chance to be saved. Right? So Nityananda Prabhu says the same thing to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He says, my Lord, if you start killing, because they are sinful, then the whole population will have to be killed. Then whom will you preach to? Right? You have come to preach the glory of Sankirtan and everyone is sinful. If you start killing, then no one will live. राइट, प्रचार कैसे होगा, राइट? सो देयरफॉर पीपल आर एनीवेयर बीइंग किल्ड बाय देयर ओन कर्मा, दैट दे विल सफर मिसफॉर्च्यून एंड सो ऑन. यू शो मर्सी टू देम, यू शो मर्सी टू देम. इफ यू हैव टू किल, यू एवरीवन विल किल्ड, हुम विल बी द रेसिपिएंट ऑफ मर्सी देन, राइट? एवरीवन इज प्रैक्टिकली लाइक देम, सो लाइक दैट, राइट? सो देयरफॉर नित्यानंद प्रभु आस्क लॉर्ड चैतन्य महाप्रभु दैट यू ब्रिंग ए चक्रा फ्रॉम योर फिंगर, पुट अ थ्रेड इन दैट होल, यूज इट एज अ करताल, राइट, टू प्रीच द मैसेज ऑफ द होली नेम. सो द सुदर्शन चक्र शुड बी यूज लाइक अ करताल इन कलियुगा, राइट? द होली नेम, दैट इज द मेन वेपन. सो प्रभुपाद सेज the last, no, not the last, in the middle I am reading, probably the 10th or 12th line of the purport. Vaishnavas therefore should not try to kill by any action of the body or mind, but should try to revive the Krishna consciousness of others out of compassion for them. Further, Prabhupada says, the Krishna conscious movement has been started to deliver the envious persons of the world from the clutches of Maya, and even though devotees are sometimes put into trouble, they push on Krishna consciousness in all tolerance. So in this purport, basically the fourth point Lord Shiva is making is, you should show mercy to those who are being already killed by their karma. So you don't kill them, you should revive daksha. So you should show mercy to those who are being already killed. You don't have to give separate punishment. You don't have to give separate punishment. 48. Yasminyada pushkaranabhamayaja Durantayas prishtadhiya prithakdisha Kuruvanti tatrahi anukampaya kripam Nasadavo deva balat krite kramam.
My dear Lord, if in some places materialists who are already bewildered by the insurmountable illusory energy of the Supreme Godhead sometimes commit offenses, a saintly person with compassion does not take this seriously, knowing that they commit offenses because they are overpowered by the illusory energy, he does not show his prowess to counteract them.
So Vishnu Saraswati Thakur, he very beautifully described this point of Lord Brahma. He is saying, whenever and wherever those controlled by Maya commit offenses to devotees, the devotees show mercy to them. Since mercy is their nature, they do not counterattack, since karma bestows suffering upon them anyway. Right? So this is the extension of the same point. Right? In the last point, he said, you should show mercy even to those who are already being killed by their karma. So he further says, not just that, even one should show mercy to those who offend them. Right? Vaishnavas are very tolerant. So like that point is given further emphasis and further elaboration. But I think the devotee being tolerant are merciful to even those who offend them. Right? Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to say, we wish nothing but highest good to our worst enemies. Right? Nothing less than that. Right? We wish nothing but highest good to our worst enemies. Right? So one should understand that it said that the power of forgiveness is one of the greatest benediction upon the Supreme Lord, upon a jiva, on a particular jiva, right? The power to forgive. Because forgiveness can only be exercised in the material world. There is no question of exercising forgiveness in the spiritual world, right? Because that is without any kuntha, right? Without any conflicts, quarrels, right? That is the vaikuntha. So the forgiveness is exercised only in the material world, right? So it is one of the greatest benedictions of the Lord if one can have the power of forgiveness. Right? So in this way, Lord Brahma is, right? There are so many examples. Prabhupada gives the example of Parikshit Maharaj. And especially it is very difficult to forgive. You may forgive, you know, in general, somebody who may not have done so much harm or something. But it is like very difficult to forgive a person who has done a severe offense or criticized, right, or plotted against. It's very difficult actually. Even after 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, a person still is not able to fully forgive. Right? And Bhakti Vrat Bhagat Maharaj, he was giving the Holy Name seminar. He said, this also poses one of the great obstacles to our pure chanting of the Holy Names. Unless we let go, unless we actually forgive and seek forgiveness, right? Unless we forgive people, let go, and unless we beg forgiveness from those whom we may have offended, we will not be able to overcome and reach the platform of chanting purely. So therefore, Brahmaji is saying in this fifth point that you being a great devotee, you please practice tolerance and you show mercy even to those who are offenders. Right? Example of Prahlad Maharaj praying for his father, example of Amrish Maharaj praying for Durvasa Muni, example of Srila Haridas Thakur praying for those who are beating. These are very high examples. Right? So it is very difficult to practice, very easy to say, but somehow we must practice that, right, if we want to advance further. Right? Also, forgiveness and non-enviousness are also related. Right? A devotee is not even envious of those who hurt him or plot against him, right, or harm him in so many various ways. Devotee is not even envious of that, of them. Right? On the contrary, a devotee even becomes their well-wisher. Right? This is a very advanced level of devotional service, right, as exhibited by all the great personalities. Bhavamstu pumsa paramasya mayaya duntayas prishtamati samasta drek taya hatatma suvanu karma chetasa anugraham kartumiharhasi prabho.
My dear Lord, you are never bewildered by the formidable influence of the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, you are omniscient and should be merciful and compassionate towards those who are bewildered by the same illusory energy and are very much attached to fruitive activities.
Okay, so in this sixth point Brahmaji makes, you know, sixth reason he is giving is that those who are above Maya should show mercy to those who are under Maya. Prabhupada also writes toward the end of the first paragraph, a Vaishnava should take care of those who are bewildered by this Maya instead of becoming angry with them, because without a Vaishnava's mercy they have no way to get out of the clutches of Maya. Those who have been condemned by Maya are rescued by the mercy of devotees. Right? So very beautiful how Prabhupada's own compassion comes out. Those who are condemned by Maya are rescued by the mercy of devotees. Okay. So those who are above Maya should show mercy to those who are under Maya. That is the sixth line of reasoning Lord Brahma says. So just again briefly going through the six points Lord Brahma makes from verse 44. First is, you should protect the Varnashrama institution which you have instituted, right? Second is saying, by the rules of karma, Daksha should not be punished because he is pious. The third point he made is, your punishment is actually your mercy to him. Right? Your punishment is actually mercy to him. Then you should show mercy now, right? And not kill. You already killed Daksha, but you should show mercy by reviving him, because he's already been killed by his own karma. Right? That's the fourth point. And fifth point made is, the devotees being tolerant show mercy even to those who offend them. Right? And the sixth point made is, those who are above Maya should show mercy to those who are under Maya. So in this way, 6 points Brahmaji makes to make the case of the demigods strong, and now he straightforward puts the request in the next 4 verses. Read the translation.
My dear Lord Shiva, you are a shareholder of a portion of the sacrifice and you are the giver of the result. The bad priest did not deliver your share and therefore you destroyed everything and the sacrifice remained unfinished. Now you can do the needful and take your rightful share. My dear Lord, by your mercy, the performer of the sacrifice, King Daksha, may get back his life. Bhaga may get back his eyes. Bhrigu his mustache. And Pusa his teeth.
Okay, so Lord Brahma is telling, now by your mercy, you perform ophthal surgery for Bhaga, get back his eyes. Plastic surgery for Bhrigu. Dental surgery for Pusa. Right? And head transplant surgery for Daksha. Yes.
May the demigods and the priest whose limbs have been broken by your soldiers recover from the injuries by your grace.
Right? This is orthopedic surgery. So Lord Brahma is recommending all that perform all kind of, by your mercy, restore all of them. Right? Yes.
O destroyer of the sacrifice, please take your portion of the sacrifice and let the sacrifice be completed by your grace.
Okay, so again, twice he says, take your sacrifice, take your share of sacrifice. Not to bribe Lord Shiva, but to tell actually, when you take sacrifice, when you accept your share, when you participate, then the whole sacrifice will become auspicious, right? He's Shiva. So his participation, his acceptance of his portion, right, will make the yajna auspicious, right? And Prabhupada said, one of the places said, Shiva Vihin Yajna, Prabhupada talks of in one of the purports, you will see that Shiva Vihin, that Lord Shiva doesn't participate, that is, that yajna is devoid of all auspiciousness. And Prabhupada talks of the importance of performing yajna. Yajna means for the satisfaction of Supreme Personality of Godhead, activity performed for satisfaction. It creates auspiciousness. Right? That is talked in the first paragraph. And Prabhupada says that after the yajna is performed, everyone gets his share of sacrifice, that is prasad. Right? And Prabhupada said, Lord Shiva also deserves prasad. Right? He was even denied his prasad, therefore he became angry. Right? Prabhupada talks that in the second paragraph. And then Prabhupada says, by the mediation of Lord Brahma, however, everything was settled satisfactorily. Right? So we have to learn the art of mediation from Lord Brahma. It's a very thankless task, right? But Brahma mediated. He gave a seminar on dangers of Vaishnava aparad to the demigods, and he gave the seminar on the art of forgiveness to Lord Shiva. Right? Different seminar he gave, because there's a mediation, right? There's a mediation. So he, in this way, he brought the two parties together, right, by instructing them how and what they need to hear. Right? And Prabhupada says, finally, no other yajna can be performed other than the Sankirtan yajna. Right? And he said, in the yajna, even if one demigod remains unsatisfied, there can be so much disturbance. But in the performance of Sankirtan, all the demigods will be perfectly satisfied. And it's the easiest, most. And also Prabhupada says, this Harinam Sankirtan, like sometimes we say, we are chanting for pure devotional service, right? But Prabhupada says, this Sankirtan is to be performed even for the balance of social peace and prosperity. Right? So the Vaishnavas should not just we are performing sankirtan, of course, for pure devotional service, but this sankirtan is as a yajna is to be performed even for social peace and prosperity. It was quite amazing. Just recently, I was reading Lilamrit, and India was in war with Pakistan over Bangladesh, 1971. Right? You heard of that war, 1971, over Bangladesh, India-Pakistan war. And the war, Prabhupada said, when the war began, Prabhupada said, war will end shortly, and India will win. And the devotees later, and actually that happened, and the devotees later said, Prabhupada, how could you say that? Prabhupada said, because we perform so much Sankirtan in New Delhi, the capital of India, therefore India has won the war very easily, because our performing Sankirtan, if the war has ended very soon, there is no social peace and prosperity due to the performance of Sankirtan Yajna, right? Prabhupada attributed to this, to the performance of Sankirtan, right? So therefore, Sankirtan has to be performed on a bigger scale in more, you know, town, city, villages, and that will also bring, right, Prabhupada writes with a great amount of conviction, social peace and prosperity will also follow by the performance of Sankirtan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.